I've had several Bible class teachers come up to me, and they have been studying through the book of Numbers in their Sunday school class as we have been, as I've been preaching through and as we've been listening to Numbers up here. But you know, in Sunday school, you can only stay in one book for so long, and they have moved on to the book of Joshua. They are in the promised land, and their preacher is still wandering in the wilderness. So they have encouraged me to hurry up and join them in the promised land. So we will conclude our lessons from Numbers today. We will finish up in Numbers chapter 32 and jump into Joshua chapter 22 is where we will end up today. The last lesson I'd like to take from Numbers, there are many, many more that I would like to get to and that we can all benefit from, but those will be for you to discover on your own now. But one of the last lessons I want to take from this book that often is associated with counting and law is actually an application for us as a people, but not just a people, as a family. How we as the church, how the Israelites as God's chosen people, all of those were supposed to function like a family. As I was preparing for this lesson, I thought through what are the messages we're getting about what families are supposed to be. We get a lot of different messages, radio, TV, movies, our peers, the people that we work with, the people we go to school with. We got a lot of different messages. One of the interesting messages we get recently is in reality TV. I honestly don't watch a lot, but I know enough to know that they take a group of people in some of these shows and they stick them in a house or out on an island or in some business scenario, and they have to accomplish some purpose and some task together, right? They're a group. Sometimes they're a family that is put together that needs to work toward a common goal. But they don't really function like a family, do they? Because if somebody wins or if somebody succeeds at a challenge, is the whole family blessed by that person's success and achievement? No. That one person who gets it, they're the ones who get to enjoy that blessing. Now, what if someone fails at the task? What if a member of the group fails? What does Donald Trump say, right? You fired, right? Is that what he says? You make a mistake in this group that's supposed to be working toward a common cause, and you could be kicked off. Which makes for good entertainment. You know, I guess it makes for good business because they keep bringing in the money. But really, kind of a poor way to run a family, isn't it? I'll tell you about some of my family. An uncle of mine, his name is David, so you'll be able to remember that. He has five kids. Maybe they should do a reality show about his life. But his youngest son, he has four girls and one son, and his youngest son is also named David. They call him Davy. So David will tell you a story about David and his son Davy, all right? One name, shouldn't be too hard to remember. So I think about these principles and these things about groups and families that we learn from television and things like that, and I think, well, what if my uncle, what if he came home and he's in the IT business, he does networking for computers. What if he had done some great project and he got a bonus in his job? And he comes home and he tells his family and his son, he says, look, I've got this bonus and I've got a couple extra $100 this month. But, you know, I'm the one who earned it. And so, Davey, you don't get to enjoy this. All right, I earned it. So maybe someday when you're old enough, you can earn some extra money and actually buy food for yourself. Those kind of things. It doesn't really work in a family, right? Well, dad wins it, so he's the only one who gets to enjoy it. Well, what if David comes home and he had given his son an instruction to do something? I'm sure you heard about the snowstorm in the lower 48, the giant system they had moved through. Some people were naming it Snowmageddon 2011. Snowpocalypse, right? It was the end of the world that they were facing. Well, what if David comes home and he had told Davy during the day, he says, I need you to shovel the walkway, okay? And he comes home and the walkway still has snow on it. You're fired, right? Is that what you do to your son who doesn't obey? You're fired. You're out of the family. You're done. It doesn't seem like a very good way at all to run a family. Thankfully, God has not made his people an organization where we can hire and fire people depending on how we feel. Because you know what? I probably would have been hired and then fired a long time ago. God has made his people a family. We have important beliefs and important expectations about one another. But how do we act as a family when we are blessed, whether individually or as an individual family within the greater group? How do we react to that? How do we react to blessings we receive in our life? Do we allow the blessing we receive as an individual to separate us from the rest of the family? Or do we use that as an opportunity to draw closer to one another? What about when we encounter strife? Perhaps we're struggling with a brother or a sister in the church family amongst God's people. Do we use that as an opportunity to draw closer or an opportunity to push one another away? If we were a business, we could take those opportunities and do whatever we wanted to with them. Push people away, keep it all for ourselves. But God has not made us a business. He has made us a family. He's made us a family to emphasize our need to draw closer to one another in all circumstances. In all circumstances, we ought to draw closer to one another as a family. Because when God's people draw closer together, the blessings we receive as individuals, we can multiply those and we can share those and not just keep those for ourselves. Numbers chapter 32. Let's get into our text. So they've completed their wilderness wanderings. The people of Israel have been counted once again. And they're on the bank of the Jordan. They're on the east side, which for you, the east side, even though this is my west, the east side, right? And they're trying to get to the promised land over here on the west side. And the Jordan is in the way. And there's 2.5 tribes. There's Gad and there's Reuben and there's Manasseh, half of Manasseh. They have flocks of sheep. And what do you need if you have flocks of sheep? You need pasture land, right? Well, they figure out that over here on the eastern side of the Jordan, this is good pasture land. This is great for our flocks. Moses, why don't you let us stay over here? This is what's going to be best for our livelihood anyway. Starting in verse 1 of Numbers 32. Now the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad had an exceedingly large number of livestock. So when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that it was indeed a place suitable for livestock, the sons of Gad and the sons of Reuben came and spoke to Moses and to Eleazar the priest and to the leaders of the congregation, saying, Ataroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Elealeh, Sebam, Nebo, and Beon, the land which the Lord conquered before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock. And your servants have livestock. They said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. But Moses said to the sons of Gad and to the sons of Reuben, shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? So what do they say? They say, Lord, you brought us to this promised land, but we want this space here because this is what's going to be best for our family. We want this to be our blessing. We want this to be our promise. The only problem with that is there's still giants over yonder. There's still a whole load of Canaanites that need to be taken care of over in the western portion of Canaan. And so some of God's people have received the promise. Some of them have received safety, and it seems as though they're content to not help the rest of God's people get to where they need to go. Moses reminds them of an important obligation. He says, yes, you've received your blessing, and I don't have a problem with you staying here, but are you not going to go and fight with your brothers and sisters to win this promised land? Are you going to use your blessing or your accomplishment or this thing that you have as an excuse to not help your brothers and sisters also find blessing that they're supposed to have? Let's read verse 16 down through 15 together. Moses says, shall your brothers go to war while you yourselves sit here? Now why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them? This is what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. Moses reminds them. He says, what you're doing is selfish here. It's like when the spies were back, when you guys were back in the desert, and they said, we don't want to go up there because that's too scary. That's not good for us. We want to stay here. Moses is accusing them of the same thing here. Verse 9, for when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the sons of Israel, so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger burned in that day, and he swore, saying, none of the men who came up from Egypt, from 20 years old and upward, shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, for they did not follow me fully. Except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have followed the Lord fully. So the Lord's anger burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until the entire generation of those who had done evil in the sight of the Lord was destroyed. Now behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to add still more to the burning anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once more abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all of these people. Moses reminds them of their obligation. Just because they have received blessing, they should not distance themselves from the rest of God's people. Even in times of blessing, God's people need to draw closer to one another. And it's a big deal. In verse 20, Moses goes on, and this is a popular saying that we use sometimes when we're talking about sin. Go down to verse 23. But if you do not do this, Moses says, if you do not go with your brothers and sisters into the land of Canaan, behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Your sin will find you out. And we teach that a lot. We say, you know, if you engage in some type of sexual sin, your sin is going to catch up with you. You may get away with it now, but it's going to catch up with you later. And if you engage in some type of financial dishonesty or sin, or with drugs or some other kind of thing, you know, that's going to catch up with you. But Moses isn't talking about sexual sin. He's not talking about finances. He's not talking about substance abuse here. What is he saying? He says, if you do not stay committed to your brothers and sisters, if you allow your blessing to come between you and who you need to be to your family, then that sin will find you out. You know, it's easy to be in the blessing of God, whether it's a physical blessing, spiritual blessing, perhaps it's a time of maturity and understanding in your life. It's easy to use that as an excuse to separate yourself from the family, to separate yourself, to get in a content position. But he says, you know what? That act will separate and will affect the entire congregation, the entire family. We are continually obligated to the needs of our brothers and our sisters. Amen. There was an experience I had a few summers ago. I took some teenagers up into the wilderness of Colorado. And we had a wide variety of hiking skills and abilities. We had, you know, the gung-ho macho guys who wanted to just storm the mountain and conquer everything. And we had several others who, they had never done this before, but they were brave enough to give it a shot. They were, you know, the greenhorns, the chichacos, right? Isn't that a more culturally appropriate phrase for a rookie? So we took them up there, and we wanted to hike a 13er. We couldn't take them up a 14er, so we had to do a 13er in Colorado. We're taking kids from maybe 500 feet above sea level, and suddenly we jump them up to 1,300 feet or 13,000 feet above sea level. They're going to be hurting. They're going to be struggling. And so we were going to take them and do a practice hike about half the way, and then the next day we were going to go the whole way. You know, that's how they do it when they climb Everest, right? You just kind of go in little leapfrogs, little leaps and bounds. Well, of course, some of our macho guys got halfway up the first day, and they said, hey, we can do this. We can conquer this 13er today. We're going to go do it. well, what about these other people? No, it doesn't matter. We're going to leave them here, and if they hurt, that's their own fault. We're going to go and we're going to conquer this thing. Well, good for you. But if you get what you want at the expense of your brothers and your sisters' needs, then what have you really accomplished? I mean, is it about winning in the family? Hey, Dad wins, and the rest of the family loses. Guess what? Dad doesn't get credit for that one because the family pays the price. Same thing in a marriage, right? You know, a husband and wife are in an argument, and boy, the wife, she really zings him, and she wins that argument. Guess who wins? The marriage? No, the marriage doesn't win. If one or the other wins and the other loses, the really important thing, the marriage, the family, the community, ends up on the short end of the stick. And so we had to teach these young men, you know what, leadership is not just getting the victory. Leadership is not just being number one. It's making sure you still got followers behind you, that you're working to help them achieve the blessing and the maturity and the success that God has planned for them. So verse 16 through 19, the eastern tribes, they get it. They get it. This is important because we often point out where Israel failed, but here they get it. Verse 16, they came near to him and said, this is the eastern tribes come near to Moses, excuse me. They come near to him. They draw close to him and they say, we will build here sheepfolds for our livestock and cities for our little ones. But we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the sons of Israel, until we have brought them into their place, while our little ones live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. They say, all right, we're not going to neglect our own families, okay? In our service to the church, we can't neglect our own family. We can't go bless the church and have our own individual family go down in flames. They say, we'll build protection for them. We'll build cities and we'll care for them, but we're going to go and make sure the community as a whole receives the blessing of God. And God is pleased when this happens. He is pleased when his family fulfills its obligation to one another, to draw closer to each other and multiply our blessings. It's wonderful when somebody in the family is blessed and is joyous over the things they have received. That is great, but we need to use that as a time to draw closer and to share our blessings together. Let's turn over to Joshua. Chapter 22. When God's people act like a family, they're supposed to multiply their blessings and share their blessings together, help each other achieve the goal. We also have a responsibility to mitigate strife, to cool down our conflicts within the family. God's people draw closer to each other by doing this. Joshua 22, as Isaac read for us. Notice how Joshua commends them in Joshua 22, starting in verse 2. You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have listened to my voice in all that I commanded you. You have not forsaken your brothers these many days to this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers as he spoke to them. Therefore, turn now and go to your tents, to the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan. Only be careful to observe the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, to love the Lord your God and walk in all his ways, keep his commandments and hold fast to him and serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. And so Joshua sends them home. He says, you have waited to receive your blessing until the rest of my people have. And so now you can go home and you can enjoy what I have given to you in the promised land. And he also tells them, obey what I have commanded you. So what do they do? Verse 10 through 12. As they're going back, before they cross over the Jordan again, in verse 10, they do something significant. They do something that ends up stirring a bit of strife up amongst God's people. Verse 10, when they came to the region of the Jordan, which is in the land of Canaan, the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built an altar there by the Jordan. A large altar in appearance. NIV says an imposing altar. and the sons of Israel heard it. Behold, the sons of Reuben, the sons of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh have built an altar at the frontier of the land of Canaan in the region of the Jordan on the side belonging to the sons of Israel. May not make a lot of sense to us here, but if you go back in Leviticus chapter 7, verses 8 and 9, you see that God says clearly, don't build an altar, don't build and sacrifice someplace other than where I tell you to. God has placed his people in Canaan, and he's placed his altar in the tabernacle. He says, this is where you're supposed to sacrifice. And yet these eastern tribes are heading back, and what do they build? They build an altar. Great. Now part of the family's gone off the deep end. Perhaps those are our more liberal brothers who are going off and doing something that they're not supposed to. Have they sinned? Have they rebelled? Notice what happens in verse 12. When the sons of Israel heard of it, the whole congregation of the sons of Israel gathered themselves at Shiloh to go up against them in war. They're building an altar where they're not supposed to. Let's go to war. Let's go get those guys. They've obviously sinned. They're obviously not doing what they're supposed to do. And we need to go and we need to get them. Man, how quickly God's people go to war with one another. How quickly God's people turn on each other. Now, we don't know yet that the eastern tribes have actually forsaken God. We don't know that they've done anything wrong. And based purely upon suspicion and rumor, the Israelites say, that's not right. Those aren't our brothers and sisters anymore. We need to go to war with them. It's like our reality TV shows, right? Somebody makes a mistake, you're fired. If we just get him off the show, that guy's kind of weird. Let's just get him off the show and we'll be able to win the money, right? These people are going back and they're not doing what they're supposed to. Let's just get him out of the picture. Well, at least the example I see from my uncle and his son, Davey doesn't shovel the driveway. Well, do you fire him? Do you send him away? Sorry, last chance, son. Can you do that? I mean, what if there was some other circumstance? What if there was a good reason why that hadn't happened? That's why our first reaction needs to be to draw closer to one another. Perhaps little Davy did make a mistake. Well, then he needs to be punished for that. But what if there's another reason? What if there's something else there? The first step that needs to be taken is to draw our brothers and our sisters and our children closer to one another. Let's consider for a moment. Let me share this with you. There's this plaque up in Lauren's house. I think it like defines who Lauren Hollingsworth is. Okay, it's awesome because at the end of it says, "Life is not a journey to arrive at the grave safely in a well-preserved body." Okay, in Lauren's opinion, it's not about getting there safely in a well-preserved body. It's about sliding in sideways, worn out, shouting hallelujah. What a ride. Any of you who know him know that. He tells a story about going into the doctor's office, and the doctor's flipping through his chart, and he's got quite a list of things on the chart. And he looks up at Lauren, and he says, man, you have had one enjoyable life. I mean, you can't break this many bones in your body and not have had a good time doing it. The point is, though, when we hurt something, all right, when Lauren breaks his arm or when he has cracked his ankle or whatever, I mean, do you cut that part off and wait till it gets better? No. I think I might have hurt something, so I'm just going to cut it off and separate it. And if you decide to get healed, then I'll put you back on. But until then, you're just going to stay there and be broken. I mean, Lauren would be little more than perhaps a torso or less. If that is what had happened. But if you suspect that something is broken or something is damaged, then you pull that body part close to you. If you think it's your arm, you pull it close and you make yourself a sling and you hold it there until it heals and until you know exactly what is going on with it. You draw it near in hope of healing. And so Israel, thankfully, does not go to war and cut off this part of their body that they think is injured. They go to them. They send a delegation in verse 13 of Joshua 22. Then the sons of Israel sent to the sons of Reuben and to the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh and to the land of Gilead Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, and with him 10 chiefs, one chief of each father's household from each of the tribes of Israel. And each one of them was the head of his father's household among the thousands of Israel. See, they need to go investigate and figure out what's going on. They need to allow for the relationship to be preserved and for righteousness to prevail. Verse 21, I won't read all of this section here, but the delegation of Israel goes and they find their brothers and they say, what's going on? Because it looks like you're doing something that you shouldn't do. Can you explain this to us? The eastern tribes, they reply in verse 22. They say, the mighty one, God, the Lord, the mighty one, God, the Lord, he knows, and may Israel itself know. If it was in rebellion or in any unfaithful act against the Lord, do not save us this day. If we have built us an altar to turn away from following the Lord, or if to offer a burnt offering or grain offering on it, or if to offer sacrifices of peace, of a peace offering on it, may the Lord himself require it. But truly, we had done this out of concern for a reason, saying, in time to come, your sins may come to our sons and say, what have you to do with the Lord, with the God of Israel? They say, look, we know that we're only supposed to worship God and sacrifice where he appoints us to. But we built this altar for a reason, not to sacrifice on, but it's supposed to be a memorial. A witness to remind you guys that we serve the same God. Because we're going to go to this faraway place. It's like part of the family moving far off. Sometimes it's difficult, it's challenging to keep in touch with what's going on there. And they realized this and they saw that in the future, Israel may look at them, the eastern tribes thought that Israel may look at them and say, wait a minute, you live on the wrong side of the river. You don't belong to us. You don't belong to our God. And so we built this altar to remind you that we serve the same God. We serve the same God and are interested in the same thing. The altar was built to preserve unity, to remind Israel and themselves of the God that they both serve. Just think of the damage that would have been done had Israel chosen to go on to war. I mean, read on or read backwards, and you see the damage that is done when families turn on one another. But our first obligation, now, we may have obligations later on to deal with sin and disobedience and punishment, and God deals with that. But our first obligation as God's people, when there's suspicion or there's strife or there's difficulty, we ought to pull one another closer. Amen. That needs to be our first reaction, is to pull one another closer. And God is pleased when his family fulfills this obligation to draw closer and to work through strife as a family ought to work through strife. I was speaking with one of the brothers this morning and we were talking about this lesson. And I said, well, I'll talk a little bit about the family and how we ought to act, you know. And he said, sometimes we do a really good job of acting like a family. Unfortunately, that means we do a really good job of getting under each other's nerves, right? We do a really good job of getting after one another. When really we should be known for being the opposite. We should have a legacy for handling strife as a family in a positive way of drawing one another closer. Which brings us into our final point, which is a brief point. When God's people draw closer, they mold a legacy, not only for themselves, but for those who follow afterwards. This monument was not just going to remind the current generation, but it was going to remind their children and their children's children that we are a family. And this is the way we deal with blessing. And this is the way we deal with strife. Verse 31 and 34. Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, said to the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the sons of Manasseh, today we know that the Lord is in our midst, because you have not committed this unfaithful act against the Lord. Now you have delivered the sons of Israel from the hand of the Lord. Notice what he says there. He says, by the way that we handle this, when you guys came and you shared your blessing with us, and when we came and we talked to you when we were concerned about that, the Lord was in our midst. And that's the legacy that is being passed on to the family of God. Is this is how we treat one another. We're not a business. We're not an organization. We're a family that in all circumstances draws closer to one another. And it wasn't just a lesson that had been spoken or that had been written down, but the children had seen this happen. And that's how you form a legacy, is by doing the things that God has asked us to do. So we finish with our story of my uncle and his son. The legacy that he is leaving for his family. When David comes home and he has this extra bonus or this opportunity that's been given to him, but he uses that to share with his family and to bless his family. Guess what Davy learns about priorities? He learns that the family is the priority. He learns that whatever dad earns, he gives to his family first. He sees that legacy in his father. And when David comes home and he sees his son perhaps causing strife, or he sees that he hasn't done what he's supposed to do, rather than sending the son away, he says, look, I'm gonna sit down with you and we're going to talk this through and I'm going to figure out. I'm going to pull you close. And so David always knows, you know, no matter what happens, I'm going to be pulled close. Even when I mess up, I'm going to have somebody who pulls me close and cares about me and leads me in the right direction. God has made his people a family to emphasize our need to draw close to each other in all things. Whether in blessing or whether in strife, we have the opportunity to draw close. And that's what this invitation that we're going to offer is really a part of. It's our opportunity, whether you're experiencing God's blessing and you want to share that with the church, or you have some kind of need that you want to share publicly or perhaps privately. When you do that, you are pulling close to God's family. You're pulling together. You're drawing near to people who care about you. And so if you have a need, don't let the family go without knowing that you have a need. Pull close to one another. Let's all stand together. Come forward if you need to while we stand and sing.